Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis. This edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on field marketing in weeks 16 and 17. Frenis supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
So, if you're listening right now and you work in B2B marketing, this deep dive is built entirely around what's actually working on the ground today. We're, pulling straight from the front lines of event strategy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine dropping like $100,000 on this towering futuristic trade show booth. You've got the LED walls, the espresso bar, a completely packed floor.
The dream setup, right?
Right. You capture 500 great conversations and then you just wait. Your sales team literally waits 45 days for a scrubbed spreadsheet just so they can follow up.
Yeah, the classic post-show CSV delay.
Maddening. So today, we're cutting through the fluff to look at that massive disconnect between what event marketing looks like and how it actually generates pipeline. We're getting into the strategy, the tech, and honestly, the unvarnished reality of field marketing right now.
And that 45-day wait you just mentioned, I mean, that is the perfect place to start because it is the absolute definition of a structural bottleneck. We saw Sridhar Ranganathan and the folks over at Single Writing posting about this exact agonizing delay.
You have these super high-intent conversations on the floor, and then you're just stuck waiting for the organizer to send a list.
Yep.
Then marketing has to, clean it, deduplicate it, enrich it, route it to sales. By the time an SDR calls that prospect, the lead is completely cold. It's like relying on a post-show CSV is like asking someone for their number and then waiting a month to send a carrier pigeon. I mean, why are we still doing this?
We're doing it because of legacy event infrastructure. But what's really fascinating is that the market is finally rejecting it. Like, the shift is moving entirely to real-time intent capture. Nick Bennett actually broke this down recently, and the numbers are just wild.
Oh, the badge scanner numbers.
Yes. He estimated companies are wasting around $30,000 a year just renting those clunky, outdated badge scanners from event organizers.
Which are basically monopolies for the venue, right?
Exactly. But Bennett points out that modern teams are just completely bypassing them now. They're moving to universal apps like Blink, which capture and enrich the data with AI the absolute second you scan a badge or a business card.
Right. But capturing the data faster is really only half the battle. It's what you do in that critical, like 30-minute window after the conversation that actually matters. Mm. Connor Jeffers shared this brilliant play on that.
So the SMS one.
Yeah. So he's running HubSpot combined with Sales MSG. The moment the event ends, or even the moment the prospect walks away from the booth, it triggers a highly personalized SMS survey.
Notice the mechanism there, though. It is not an email.
Exactly. I mean, an email sent 3 days later just gets completely buried in a 5,000 unread corporate inbox. A text message taps into that immediate dopamine loop of a phone buzz while that prospect is, like, literally still sitting in their Uber, leaving the venue.
It just bypasses the corporate firewall entirely.
It really does. And Pasha Irshad added another layer to this, noting that HubSpot has modernized its architecture so that event data is now tightly integrated directly with deals and revenue on the company record.
Which changes the fundamental workflow of a field marketer. You aren't just capturing a lead anymore. You're automating the qualification and triggering the follow-up without that post-event friction. But, and there is a massive danger here, Jonathan Kazarian raised a really important warning about what he calls tech stack bloat.
Oh, I see this all the time.
Right. We're seeing teams cobble together 5, 6, sometimes 7 different point solutions just to run a single event in 2026. They are drowning in tech debt.
Marketing ops basically ends up spending more time managing the APIs between the registration software, the scanning app, and the CRM than they do, actually marketing the event.
And that completely defeats the purpose of automation. Daniel Christensen argues that success isn't about buying the shiniest new AI feature. It's about standardization. You have to treat unexpected changes as stress tests for your core infrastructure.
Yeah, Vanessa Lovett nailed this reality when she pointed out that most event tech consulting today is really just fixing problems that suppliers never told you about during the sales pitch.
Right. You have to clarify your goals first, strip away the bloated features, and demand honest answers about integrations from these suppliers.
You essentially need tools that balance raw AI automation with human control. Mohammed Yunus highlighted this dynamic perfectly when he was discussing VFair's hosted buyer programs. The AI does the heavy lifting of matching and scheduling thousands of meetings based on mutual interest.
Which would take humans weeks to do manually.
Exactly. But the organizers keep strict control over the parameters. So the tech captures the intent and does the math, but it doesn't, hijack the steering wheel.
But, you know, standardizing all this flawless outreach creates a new, almost existential problem for the industry. If we can automate the matchmaking and we can trigger the perfect personalized SMS follow-up, why do we even need physical events?
Right.
Why are hundreds of thousands of people flying to Vegas or Paris if the tech can do the heavy lifting?
This is where Volodymyr Demianenko's concept of the AI paradox comes in.
Mm.
And I think this is the most profound shift we've seen in B2B marketing in a decade.
It really is. Demianenko points out that mega tech conferences are absolutely exploding right now, which feels super counterintuitive in this Zoom-dominated, AI-driven world. His thesis is that AI has commoditized digital trust.
Because literally anyone with a basic SaaS subscription can automate a sequence of 10,000 hyper-personalized emails now. The barrier to entry for sounding like a thoughtful human in an email is, well, zero.
Precisely. The value of cold digital outreach is plummeting because buyers know it's likely a machine. You can automate an email, but you cannot automate a handshake.
Right.
You can't fake the micro expressions of a founder explaining their product over a coffee. However, and this is the crux of the paradox now, the real deals aren't actually closing on those noisy 100,000-person exhibition floors.
No, those floors are just the matching engine. The actual deals are closing at the private site events, you know, the intimate dinners happening on the edges of the mega conference.
Ricky Currier talked about this exact shift. Broad field events are losing ground to smaller, highly targeted executive experiences.
Yeah, Ceci Sains shared a masterclass on this. She used an example of curating a room from scratch in Madrid. She said the biggest mistake marketers make is trying to pack a room just for the sake of registration numbers.
Which happens all the time.
Constantly. You shouldn't invite people just because they have the right job title. You have to build the entire format around a single specific question that the right people desperately want to answer together.
It's an incredibly disciplined approach. Elizabeth St. Croix reinforced this by arguing that a dinner for 20 priority accounts will always beat a massive conference activation for 2,000 random attendees.
Always.
But, you know, only if every single seat at that dinner is intentionally mapped to a specific deal cycle.
But let me pause there and push back on this push for intimacy for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If audiences want intimacy, how do we handle Gen Z attendees who value networking but statistically suffer from massive face-to-face networking anxiety?
That's a great point.
I mean, throwing a 25-year-old buyer into an intimate 20-person executive dinner might literally be their worst nightmare.
You're touching on experience design there, which is where the best field marketers earn their paychecks. Michael Hoffman shared a really innovative solution for that exact social anxiety using Gather Voice's Face Forward app.
Well, how does that work?
It implements 90-second video introductions right during the registration flow. So before the event even starts, attendees have already seen faces, heard voices, and identified people with shared goals. It drastically lowers the cognitive load and the social barrier before anyone even steps foot in the venue.
Oh, wow. That completely changes the social math. You're not walking into a room of strangers. You're walking into a room of familiar avatars. And the physical environment itself plays a huge role in lowering those defenses, too. Aurora Colella noted how hosting events in destinations like Nashville naturally lowers networking barriers just through the atmosphere.
Oh, totally. The music, the culture, it does half the icebreaking for you.
Right. And Ralph Schmidt added to this, emphasizing that planners need to utilize ShowX to inject raw emotion into these spaces. Business environments are inherently sterile. If you don't manufacture moments of awe or shared emotion, people just won't remember you.
True. But let's be brutally honest for a second. You can have the most seamless tech stack. You can host the most perfectly curated, emotionally resonant dinner in Nashville. But if your sales team drops the ball the next morning, your ROI is zero.
Ugh, the dropped ball. I have to bring up this story Joe Fontana posted because it made me physically cringe. He talked about a lazy seller who single-handedly destroyed 3 months of meticulous event ROI.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah. Marketing spent tens of thousands of dollars. They planned this incredible targeted executive dinner. They got highly qualified buyers in the room, and the seller just didn't follow up. Why? Because the seller claimed they, quote, didn't hear enough explicit buying signals during the appetizers.
It is the classic misalignment between marketing and sales. Sellers expect the buyer to sit down and say, hello, my name is John. I have a $100,000 budget, full authority, and I'd like to purchase by Q3.
Right. But Fontana rightly pointed out that real enterprise buyers do not talk like that. They drop implicit clues. They complain about their current vendor's API integrations. They mention a frustrating internal political battle over data silos.
Yeah, and if your sellers aren't trained to interpret those conversational breadcrumbs and actually work those post-event signals, your event budget is just subsidizing bad selling.
Exactly.
Rebecca Carmody echoed this exact frustration. She constantly sees booth teams at massive trade shows who are completely unbriefed, just leaning against the counter, scrolling on their phones.
Which is where we have to reevaluate the function of an event. If we connect this to the bigger picture, events don't close deals. People close deals. The event is purely an accelerator.
Jamin Nash had a brilliant post noting that the booths that actually win on the show floor start their work 60 days before the doors even open. They execute rigorous pre-event outreach. They don't just stand there hoping for foot traffic.
Right. They earn their pipeline by setting up qualified meetings weeks in advance. It requires a completely different operational discipline. Peter Tsui break it down into three mandatory phases: pre-event planning, during event intent capture, and strict post-event CRM discipline.
If you miss one, the stool falls over.
Exactly. Cynthia Montalvo took this a step further. She built a GTM event integration matrix. Instead of just throwing an event and inviting everyone, she strategically mapped specific event formats to unblock stalled deals in the mid-funnel.
Well, that's smart.
She looks at the CRM, sees where deals are bottlenecked, and designs the event to solve that specific friction.
And when you map events directly to the pipeline like that, the math becomes undeniable. Shahar Azuli shared some numbers that prove this. His team spent $127,000 across two events. Now, they treated these events with extreme discipline, clear KPIs, pre-booked meetings on the floor, and immediate round-robin lead routing, so reps were talking to prospects instantly.
Okay.
The result. They booked 91 qualified demos.
Wait, 91 enterprise demos from $127,000. That's roughly, what, $1,400 a demo?
Yep.
In B2B enterprise sales, that customer acquisition cost is an absolute steal.
Exactly. And based on their historical win rates, Azule is projecting roughly $2 million in annual recurring revenue from that single $127K spend. That proves events aren't just brand exercises, they are a massive revenue channel.
But, you know, that ROI only materializes if you're brutally honest about your metrics. Sayan Banerjee warned marketers against the trap of optimizing for LinkedIn applause instead of actual pipeline.
Oh, we all know those posts.
Right. The marketers who post photos of a line wrapped around their booth, bragging about 400 attendees, but they generate literally zero closed-won deals.
It's vanity metrics disguised as strategy.
Precisely. Hanley Tan advised that chasing unrealistic year-over-year MQL volume is a losing game anyway. The goal isn't more leads, it's account value. Sometimes the highest ROI of an event is re-engaging your existing customers to prevent churn, not just stuffing the top of the funnel.
Yeah, Matt Kleinrock, Amanda Dyson, and Fabi Rocha all advocate for this exact mindset shift. Events cannot be treated as a marketing fulfillment center that just orders swag and books catering. They must be integrated directly into the go-to-market revenue engine.
Which sounds incredibly empowering in a boardroom.
Yeah.
But driving that kind of flawless revenue machine requires a level of operational excellence behind the scenes that most executives completely misunderstand.
Well, completely.
There is a massive gap between the CRM dashboard the C-suite sees and the physical reality the field marketer is fighting on the ground.
I am so glad we are talking about this, the invisible work. Crystal Anderson posted about the reality of field marketing leadership, and it is a grind. It's 6 a.m. calls across time zones. It's managing complex logistical spreadsheets that nobody else wants to touch.
Right. It's solving absolute disasters 48 hours before the venue opens. Ashley Nelson shared this hilarious, chaotic reality check of surviving entirely on coffee, fighting for her life, untangling thousands of lanyards in a hotel hallway, and tweaking table arrangements 15 times just to get the sight lines perfect.
And Alex Adkins championed the agency teams who absorb so much of this pressure. They take the blame when the venue's Wi-Fi drops, but they make the client shine when the pipeline numbers roll in. It is grueling, highly stressful work.
And it takes a toll. Ian Morrison brought a very sobering statistic to this conversation. Burnout in the events industry is running at around 80%.
80%. And Morrison's core point is that this isn't a personal failing of the marketers. It is a systems problem. You cannot train or meditate your way out of 80% burnout. You have to schedule recovery as operational infrastructure.
Recovery is infrastructure. I want every marketing VP listening to write that down. What does that actually mean in practice, though? It means comp days are built into the project plan from day one. It means you don't expect your field marketer to run a 3-day summit, fly home on a red eye, and be in a pipeline review meeting at 9 a.m. the next morning.
Exactly. And these marketers are managing all this personal stress while dealing with insane, unpredictable financial pressures. Lance Newton pointed out the reality of union labor costs. You can design the exact same 10x20 booth, but your budget will swing wildly city by city.
Oh, yeah.
The drayage and rigging costs in Chicago might be triple what they are in Orlando.
So you're basically constantly fighting your own budget. But Alexandra Panyukina actually flips this narrative. She argues that working with tight budgets is a superpower.
Really?
Yeah. When you don't have endless cash, it strips away the confetti. You can't rely on an open bar to cover up a bad strategy. It exposes your true execution skills. If you can drive pipeline with severe constraints, you prove to leadership that you know how to scale their capital wisely.
That's a great perspective. But even with airtight budgets and perfect execution, a curveball is coming. Something will break. Andrew Ewings and Ellen Comrade both stressed that event planning is maybe 20% creativity and 80% relentless scenario planning. It is thinking ahead through every possible failure point.
Ewings noted that pressure testing your plans, trying to actively break them in a boardroom 2 months out, is far better than having them break on You Live in front of 1,000 customers.
Absolutely. Emily Dilbeck added to this, noting that knowing when to pivot is an incredibly underrated skill. Sometimes you have to abandon an original concept you spent weeks on because the reality on the ground has shifted.
And that reality is getting vastly more complex. McGill and Miggs pointed out that after recent political incidents, security protocols are changing overnight. The division of responsibility between event planners, private security, and venues is rapidly shifting. You just have to be deeply adaptable.
But you also have to be forward-thinking, because if you are putting this much blood, sweat, capital, and emotional energy into an event, you need the impact to last longer than a 3-day conference.
This is where we look at content longevity and brand memorability. Manpreet Wadhan and Amanda McNeil had fantastic insights here. They explained that with modern AI tools, your event content shouldn't just peak on the day of the keynote.
Right. You don't just record the session and dump a 45-minute video on YouTube. You use AI to slice that keynote into 15 short-form clips. You turn the Q&A into a blog post. You extract the data points for a LinkedIn carousel.
You turn a single event into a 3-month-long brand asset that influences perception and pipeline long after the doors close.
And we're also seeing a strong reminder that digital reach isn't everything. Megan Martin, Liza Lathouris, and Ashish R. all pointed out that relying solely on social media leaves massive visibility on the table.
Yeah.
A deliberate traditional media mix is crucial. Local TV, industry press, community platforms, specialized podcasts. These channels are highly effective for driving the right people into the room in specific regions.
But here's the thing that really stood out to me across all these sources. We've talked a lot about AI. Vineet Puri noted that budgets for AI and events are undeniably increasing. Lorenzo Dunnies reported that the industry has finally moved past the shiny object novelty phase and into the pragmatic integration of tools like Copilot for logistics.
Yeah, it's maturing.
But despite all of that technology, the human element is still the ultimate differentiator.
It's the only thing that actually creates loyalty.
Right. Tiffany Farai Nadler had the absolute best take on this. She hilariously pointed out that AI can draft a 20-page venue RFP in 4 seconds. It's great at that. But AI cannot read a room when the post-lunch food coma hits and the speaker is losing the crowd.
So true.
AI cannot use a roll of production tape and a safety pin to perform emergency wardrobe surgery on a panicked CEO 3 minutes before they walk on stage. AI provides the what, but humans deliver the how.
That human touch, that intuition, is what creates memorability. Ari Krajek shared a fantastic micro example of this. At events, she refuses to hand out standard business cards. Instead, she creates a customized, vertically folded mini brochure that deliberately matches the specific branding and vibe of the exact event she's attending.
Wow, that is such a small, intentional choice, but it sparks immediate conversation because it proves you actually care about the context of the room you're in. Michael Kurilek hit the nail on the head regarding this mindset. He saw a company bragging online about how they set up their entire modular booth in just 30 minutes. And he reminded the industry, setup speed is just a feature for the marketer. Brand impact is the goal.
Yeah.
A booth isn't judged by the attendees on how fast it went up. It's judged on how it performs, the friction it removes, and the human experience it creates.
It all comes back to how you make the audience feel and what you leave them with long after the lights go down.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? we want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over before your next event strategy meeting. Fabricio Godoy brought up this incredible concept of brand gravity.
Oh, I love this concept.
In B2B, we spend all our time measuring immediate ROI, NQLs, badge scans, and pipeline velocity.
Mm-mm.
But Godoy argues the ultimate question you should ask your team before your next event isn't just, what do we want people to do?
It's what do we want people to believe about us that they didn't believe before they walked in?
Because at the end of the day, if your event strategy is just about scanning a badge to trigger a delayed CSV file, you are entirely missing the magic. You've got to close the gap between the shiny event floor and the reality of the human relationships you're trying to build.
Absolutely.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, go-to-market, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing.
Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive. Don't forget to hit subscribe. And until next time, keep building that brand gravity.